Welcome to the eLaborate Topics podcast, where we focus on lab-specific strategies for medical laboratory professionals. We're proud to be the healthcare detectives that work behind the scenes to get the results needed to influence medical decisions. Let's grow together and jump right into the lab.
Hi, friends. Welcome back to another episode of the eLaborate Topics podcast. I'm your co-host for today's show, Stephanie Whitehead, and I'm so glad that you guys decided to join us today. Today, we have a very special guest to the show and a friend of eLaborate Topics, Ms. Michelle Campbell. How are you doing?
Hi, Stephanie. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Before we get too far into it, for those who are tuning in for the first time, the eLaborate Topics podcast is a weekly podcast where myself and my co-host Taiwana Wilson and Lona Small bring you topics related to leadership and the laboratory to help you develop on and off the bench. And so don't be stingy. Share this message out with your friends. We're on all podcast platforms. Join us on our conversation on LinkedIn and the eLaborate Topics group. And we're also on LabVine. So you can go and get your free subscription to LabVine and listen to our podcast as well as other laboratory podcasts through their LabStream platform. So I want to get right into it today. Michelle is a dear friend of mine and a friend of the show. Right now, we volunteer together on several committees through the ASCP. And so we work really closely together, and I'm happy for our listeners to know her a little bit better and understand her unique position in our laboratory medicine profession. So Michelle, let's just get straight into it. Why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and your laboratory journey?
Absolutely. Thank you, Stephanie. So my name is Michelle Campbell, and I currently have a couple roles. My primary job is at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, where I'm a senior developer, and that involves developing lab tests, LDTs primarily, and then I also am an adjunct assistant professor at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill for their graduate program in clinical lab sciences. So I have a bachelor's degree in medical lab sciences from Northern Illinois University and my grad degree in clinical lab science, specifically focused on molecular diagnostics from UNC Chapel Hill.
So I like to ask all my guests this because I've only had one person who has gone directly into the laboratory field. I mean, like from high school, knew they wanted to be a medical laboratory scientist and went straight into that field. Everybody else, including myself, like stumbled into laboratory medicine. We passed by some rando table at career day in undergraduate school. On our way to the cafeteria or something. And so I want to ask you as well, did you go straight into laboratory medicine in undergrad as a feel and a desire that you wanted to do? Or how did you find laboratory medicine as a career?
So the way I got into the lab certainly was not like a direct path. But instead, you know, I started my college journey. It was science focused because that's what I enjoyed. And I knew I wanted to get into healthcare. And I shadowed and I shadowed and I shadowed nurses, doctors, you know, radiology, all of the things you typically think of that are patient facing, and just none of them were the right fit. And so both of my parents are pharmacists, so similar to our position in that they're typically behind the scenes, you know, in the basement of a hospital. But even that wasn't the right fit. And so I remember my mom's hospital clinical lab had a full remodel. And so they invited all of the different departments to come take a tour through their newly remodeled lab. And my mom thought, oh, well, maybe this is something Michelle would be interested in. So she asked them at the end of the tour, could my daughter come through and shadow? And they said yes. And I came through and shadowed. And I even met some other students that were rotating through from their medical lab science program nearby. And immediately I was like, yes, perfect fit. Luckily, I had already completed a bunch of the prereqs, so I had like one more semester and I could apply for the medical lab science program, and that was it.
So that's a different story than I've heard. So did your parents help you at all with all the chemistry portions since they're pharmacists?
So, to make it even weirder, my older brother is also a pharmacist, and so he was going through pharmacy school he had just started. So he was kind of my main tutor when I would get stuck on OChem, specifically organic chemistry. He made it fun.
So I'm sure Christmas and holidays are really interesting. They probably leave you out of a little bit of stuff.
Well, it definitely solidified my career path because I was like, well, that one's not for me.
Well,
But
let's talk
yeah.
about the career path you did choose. And what I really like about a lot of the episodes that we've done on the Elaborate Topics is we've given different career and laboratory avenue options for our listeners. So many listeners who tune into this show think, I'm in the laboratory field, I'm on the bench, this is where I'll be stuck for the rest of my life. But we've had so many special guests that have come on and really explained and elaborated and cued our listeners into all of the vast opportunities there are out there for laboratory professionals and how our backgrounds really fit with so many different things that you can do besides working the bench if that's not what you want to do for your life. And your role, although in the lab, is a unique one and it seems so interesting. So, can you tell us a little bit about your role as a senior developer?
Yeah, of course. So, what I really enjoy about my role, and kind of what you've already touched on, is once we've all spent some time on the bench, after we've gotten our bearings in the lab, we think of the traditional paths usually, like, okay, I can go into management, I can become a lead tech or a technical specialist or whatever they call it at your institution. I could focus on quality. And even now, some people, there's the alternative pathway of I can focus on the informatics side of things. But what I wanted was to take the bench work and take it to the next level, put it on steroids, basically. And so that's pretty much what I do. And the way I would describe it best is if you think about the test or lab test as this living thing. And so I am with the test through its whole life. And you could think of it from ideation and having the ideas for the lab tests, designing it, developing it, validating it, verifying it, helping it go live in the clinical lab, but also maintaining it and helping the lab troubleshoot it after you have handed it off to them and it is live, if there's problems down the road. So it's really, I think of it from cradle to grave. And in my current role, I support the division of biochemistry and immunology, but we have this for all different disciplines. So I've helped with molecular virology tests and things like that. So really, again, from cradle to grave, the whole life of the test and making sure that it's high quality and scientifically sound.
And for laboratorians that are listening that may work in a smaller laboratory or may be fairly new to their career, can you just go into explaining what is a laboratory developed test? And then what are some typical steps that you do in your process in your laboratory to prepare and design and ultimately implement a lab developed test?
So, an easy way to think of it at a really high level, you can think of lab tests as two different categories, IVDs or in vitro diagnostics, which are what, all of us are familiar with in any size lab. It's the kits, it's the tests that have gone through the FDA from a manufacturer and they're FDA cleared or approved. And then LDTs or laboratory developed tests are the second category, and that's what my job centers around. And so those are tests that, in the simplest terms, you invent in your lab. And so you have to figure out the science behind the test. You have to figure out what platform or technology it's going to run on. You have to design the calibrators, the controls, everything like that. Establish a performance characteristics very deeply compared to what you would do to implement a traditional kit or something like that you would get through an IVD.
Wow, and it seemed, I like the word that you use when you said you're basically inventing a test because now you've brought a whole new innovative aspect to the role of being an MLS, right? So do you ever feel like that? Like in your role, you're able to be a little bit more innovative and more creative?
Yeah, it's what I really enjoy about it is it requires a lot of critical thinking And so in my role, I'm lucky enough that I get to do a lot of mentoring of bench techs who are considering this as their next step, or even people who are in those higher level roles, like they've been a lead tech or a technical specialist for a while. And the advice that I give them is to dive in and understand the why, the how of how your test works. And so, like you just touched on, that is what my job is understanding the how and why, and that's the important first step. But then also, like you said, is I get to be creative. So once you have that solid foundation, I'll spend a couple days to a few weeks or even months if it's a really complex test and I understand exactly how that technology functions or that test principle functions. And once you have that firm grasp, then you can get creative. Oh, I need this test to be more sensitive, or I need this test to be more specific. What aspects of it could I tweak with the science or the technology to make it even better? So, yeah, you get to be really creative.
And for somebody who's listening who might say, like, that really piques my interest, what type of, and just in your opinion, in your general opinion, what type of characteristics would you suggest that person have in order to work in a role like this? And you can go from like years of laboratory experience to, you should be, like you said, curious, you should be de detail oriented, you should have critical thinking skills, all of those things.
Yeah, so if someone's interested in getting into a test development role, of course, one of the first things is to make sure that you're gaining experience in an institution or a setting where that's a possibility, right? So you need to typically be somewhere either very large or very, that has the resources to develop LDTs and gain that experience. But I really don't think it's necessarily the years of experience on the bench, more so the depth of your knowledge and interest in the lab tests or the discipline, say it's chemistry, micro, hematology, that you want to be a lab test developer in is really your depth of understanding of that type of testing. And truly, one of the most beneficial experiences that I think someone could have is, for example, I worked on an off shift, and all of us know who have ever worked on an off shift, you get really comfortable troubleshooting instruments, troubleshooting assays, because there may not be someone on site at that specific time, and you need to get those test results out. So, if you're in the lab and you're on the bench, and someone in your lab, or even a field service person from industry, is in your lab and they're taking apart an instrument or they're troubleshooting something that's wrong with an assay, ask them what they're doing. Ask to help. Ask what the resolution was. Ask why they're doing what they're doing. And that type of experience is invaluable to getting that foundational skill set that helps you be an effective test developer.
No, I think you're so right. I worked an off shift too. I worked night shift for the first year that I got out of school, and you're exactly right. You get very comfortable working independently because there isn't that level of management, and there are from specimens to phone calls to physicians to instrument issues, so many problems that you have to just try to manage by yourself. And that night shift gets, or that evening shift also gets very close and connected. And then you learn how to be very self-sufficient on those shifts. And so if you are somebody who's out there who's listening, and when the field service engineer comes to your laboratory, they're leaning on you to kind of go over the instrument and troubleshoot with you, this might be an area that you might be able to grow into. And so, Michelle, I'm going to ask you another question, but more focused from my vantage point, because I currently work as a laboratory leader in the field. So less from a technologist standpoint and more from a laboratory leader standpoint, a lot of times establishing an LDT, it has its advantages, but it also can present a lot of challenges, especially if you don't have a specialized department, or person like yourself in our laboratory. So can you talk to both sides? And steps that laboratories can take to overcome challenges and talk to some of the advantages.
So LDTs or laboratory developed tests in and of themselves, they can definitely be a double-edged sword because on the one hand or the one side, they are so critically important to fill gaps in testing and offer these niche tests to make sure that clinicians are getting the information they need to properly assess or diagnose or monitor all of those things for a patient. But you're right, it can also be incredibly challenging and resource intensive to develop, maintain LDTs. And so what I would say is really important is to ensure that you're providing the support to whoever is in that role of developing the tests to truly spend the time and resources and energy on the front end to develop a high quality, robust laboratory test in the first place, because all of that extra time that you invest or allow them to invest at the front end will pay off in dividends down the line when you're not having issues with QC or you're, QC failing or you're not having issues maintaining the test. And so that's the advice I would give to someone in, yeah, one of those more management or leadership roles is provide that support to your test development staff up front and give them that grace and that time, because really the effort that they're putting in is to make that test as high quality as possible. So that, like I was saying, I think of it as the life of a test, so that for the whole life of the test, it's running smoothly. And if it costs you a few extra months or even an extra year on the front end, it pays off at the end.
And there's been so much talk in our arena at government and federal level about LDTs. So I'm just going to ask you, since you've got so much experience in this space, could you give us your own personal opinions or thoughts on like the VALID Act?
It's hard to follow, even in my space where this could so directly impact my day-to-day work and life. It's hard to keep tabs on exactly what's happening as this evolves. And we have organizations, you and I volunteer together for ASCP, and you have organizations like that that luckily are paying very close attention to this and trying to advocate on behalf of lab professionals, but more importantly, the patients. And so I think I have a unique perspective on this because my day-to-day job is developing lab tests, but then I also volunteer very heavily with CLSI or Clinical Laboratory Standards Institute that are writing the standards for how to properly evaluate and validate, verify lab tests. And organizations like the FDA typically or very often point labs to those and industry to those as guidelines for developing tests. But my general opinion is that, whatever the eventual outcome is, it's very important that it strikes a balance between first and foremost protecting patients by making sure that tests that are offered to them and results that are provided to their clinicians to ultimately treat them or manage them are high quality. And I think that's what everybody focuses on is important here. But on the flip side, the other side of it that needs to be balanced is we're doing a disservice to patients if we stifle this innovation or make this process too lengthy. And then they're not getting access to cutting edge, high quality, niche testing because LDTs end up taking way too long to get through this regulatory process. So my personal opinion is that there really needs to be a balance struck there between protecting the patients, of course, but also making sure that they have access to innovative tests that are ultimately going to benefit them and their care.
That's a great answer. And I think for anybody in the laboratory leadership space, or if you're really just working the bench, if you haven't been following the activity going on with the VALID Act, it's the prime time to jump in and just understand what's going on, because it's bound either way to impact what we do in our day to day. So, Michelle, as I shift back to you a little bit, sometimes as laboratories, we're already behind the scenes. I know you mentioned that in your earlier responses. But as we move further away from like the bench and the testing, it can be hard to find our motivation for what we do. And we know without that sense of motivation, senses of burnout can easily creep in. So what keeps you motivated, day to day as you go into work and do this important job?
It's very difficult or challenging, I think, when you are one step or several steps removed from the patient. So here at Mayo Clinic, we have the main downtown campus, and it's hustling and bustling, and you see patients and you see their families all the time. And that keeps you motivated because you step out for your lunch break or you step out to go grab coffee and you're feeling a little bit burnt out or you're feeling a little bit stressed. And you can look at a patient and you're like, okay, there's my why. And that helps you stay fresh and motivated. But then there's also the side of, like, for instance, where I'm working right now, a patient never enters this building. We're an off-site space. And so then it's a little harder sometimes to avoid burnout or to remind yourself of the why. And so some things that I try to do is, really maintain those connections, just like you and me, and all the other connections that we have in the lab, having those relationships in the professional world where there are people that I can talk to outside of my immediate work group to talk about, okay, this is an issue I'm having with work. How would you handle it? Or even just unwind and kind of unload your stress or talk to them or vent to them. And it's somebody who will understand because they come from a similar space as you. But that really helps me prevent burnout or manage burnout, is just having those connections. And you step out of your immediate work group and you realize, okay, there's a bigger world out there. I have support. I have people who understand what is stressing me out and what's bothering me, and people who have been through similar things. And that really helps keep me motivated.
It's called fellowship. So you're not the only fellow on this ship.
Exactly.
And you mentioned kind of me and you staying connected, but I wanted to ask you in terms of like your other connections and networking, throughout your personal or professional career, have you had mentors and what is some of the best advice that a mentor has given you along the way?
Oh gosh, I've had so many mentors personally and professionally, and I've been so lucky in that space. So I have to give shout out to several different groups. I won't name dozens of individuals, but I have educator mentors from my time in education, but also working from NIU and UNC, professional mentors from organizations that I volunteer with, like ASCP, ASCLS, CLSI, and of course mentors here at Mayo Clinic. But one in particular that I remember, and a piece of advice that's kind of stuck with me, is an individual. It's Dr. Vicki Legris, and I met her first as a student and then as a colleague at UNC at Chapel Hill. And she retired not too long ago, but she had a very long, very successful career in the space of laboratory science, and she focused on cystic fibrosis diagnostics. So starting, with the sweat tests that we all know about and learned about in school, and moving forward to molecular diagnostics. But I remember a phone call I had with her when I was kind of at a bridge or a transition point in my career, and she said, "You just need to be honest with yourself about what you're passionate about in this space. And then you need to latch on to that and run with it full speed ahead and just dig into it and keep exploring it. Learn as much as you can, be the expert, be the master of that thing, and you will find so much fulfillment. You won't burn out as easily, and you'll find so much success." And I've really run with that. And I'm so glad that I heard that advice and I saw an illustrative example of it, and that's advice I would pass on to others as well.
That's great advice. I once heard someone say, if you work in your passion, you'll never work a day in your life. And so many people, and even celebrities, so many people talk about, don't chase money, chase your passion, and the money will come. So it sounds like you got great advice up front. So, some heavy hitter, not heavy hitter, but quick hitter questions for you as we begin to wrap up. And just answer with the first thing that comes to your mind, because this will help us get a well-rounded view of Michelle. We know about her professionally, but we're going to start learning about her personally a little bit here. So, Michelle, if you could reach back to your early Michelle self, share one piece of advice that you would have given yourself back when you started your career.
So luckily, it didn't take me too long to learn this, but I do wish I learned it from the second I hit the bench. And it's, you can't complain about something unless you're also doing something to make the change. So right now, I work in test development and I have to follow rules and guidelines. Well, I better not complain about them if I'm not sitting on these teams helping write them and I'm not putting my voice out there, but that goes for any scale of work. So if you're just stepping on the bench and you have an issue with the way your shift is run, or you have an issue with the scheduling, or you have an issue with something like that, then you need to speak up and get involved and help drive that change that you want to see. It sounds very generic and cheesy, but it's so true. I don't. I would say to young Michelle, I don't want to hear you complaining unless you're doing something to make a difference about it. And if you're doing something to make a difference about it and it didn't make a change, okay, fine. There's your free pass, or there's your, you've earned your complaint. But you know what? You'd be surprised if you raise your voice and offer solutions and try to be part of the solution. I think people would be surprised, including younger me, about the change that you can affect.
Well, one, be the change you want to see, and that sounds cheesy, but it's a very real, I guess, saying or slogan. But also, once you kind of get in and you rattled off like, at least five to six professional organizations that you've worked with currently or worked with in the past, and I'm sure you'll agree, once you kind of get in and embedded into your organization that you work at, or ASCP or ASCLS or AACC or AABB, or your community, your neighborhood, your HOA, and you start to see the inner workings and the challenges that are going on, then you kind of understand the full problem and your complaint becomes different. And then you can start to action to maybe help that. Right? I'm sure you agree.
Oh, absolutely. And it's, I think we can all think of examples from our personal life, like you call out the HOA or whatever it is. It's like, okay, you can have an opinion, but please come to the table with a possible solution too. And that makes people a lot more receptive as well.
Yeah, I can name off so many organizations. Girl Scouts is one. So if you have a better way to sell these cookies every year, let me know. Next question. What are three books or movies or other resources that you'd recommend to the audience and why? We like to leave our listeners with actionable things that they can take and use in their professional careers and grow.
Well, I'm going to kind of cheat in my
Okay.
answer to this, and I'm only going to name two, but I feel so passionate about both of these. They're my favorite.
Okay. The
And I
two
wasn't
are strong
just,
enough to be three.
yes, I will say that. So, my two favorites, and if people are listening in their car, on their commute, or something like that, both of these I have listened to as ebooks, and it was great. And so, or electronic books. So my first book recommendation is Atomic Habits by James Clear. It's just filled with so much practical advice, and I don't know, I'm sure we've all read one of those books that the author is saying something and it's not that profound and it's almost common sense, but you're like, that's so simple. I can do that. Why didn't I think of that? And so if people on the call, or if people in the audience haven't heard about habit stacking, that is the best thing I learned from that book. And you just need to, as soon as you're not driving, if you're driving while listening, pull over when you get to your parking lot and look up habit stacking. It'll change your personal and professional life. It's just wow. And the second one is Grit by Angela Duckworth. I think that one's pretty popular as well, but give it a chance because it's not just saying grit is perseverance and sticking it out through the tough stuff. It's about perseverance combined with passion and how that helps you, you know, really, really be tough and work through difficult and challenging things. And those are my two recommendations, and they just have significantly impacted both my personal and professional life.
Habit stacking. I'm going to be checking that out. I wrote that down.
Yeah.
I will put links to the books in the show notes for our guests that are driving. You can check the show notes.
Perfect.
Next question. Name a guest that you'd like to see on our podcast that you haven't already, but there is a caveat because you've got to help your friend Stephanie get your answer on the show.
One guest that I think would be amazing to have on your podcast is Dr. Blair Holiday. He is the CEO of the ASCP, and not only is this person incredibly charismatic and fun to talk to, but he has just such a wealth of knowledge and experience in this space and such a fresh perspective on things that I will certainly put in a good word
You've
and try to
help
you guys
us,
get
Michelle.
Dr. Blair Holiday on
we are
this podcast.
Tagging you. We are tagging you in all kinds of all kinds of posts, social media posts about this episode, Dr. Holiday. You are on the top of our list to get you on this show.
Peer pressure.
It is. And lastly, what's one question that you wish I would have asked you, but I didn't?
So, as you mentioned at the beginning of this episode, you and I volunteer together as chair and chair-elect of the Council of Lab Professionals for ASCP. And I will give full credit to Stephanie here. We have a newsletter that goes out called the CLP Insider, and she's really taken the lead and does 99.9% of the work on that. And she will know, though, that I like adding little quotes in there. She added one on the last newsletter. But I love quotes and using them to kind of guide me through my personal and professional life. So that is one question, you know, what's my favorite quote related to work? And I have literally a whole album on my phone of screenshots of quotes from like Pinterest and different things like that. And one that I have saved or hearted is one from a gentleman named Sid Caesar. And I read it when I stress myself out too much about work. And it says, "In between goals is a thing called life that has to be lived and enjoyed." And I think that's really important for especially people who are focused on being high achievers or reaching their next goal. You know, none of us are only working on one thing at a time. We're either looking for that next promotion, or we're looking for forward to finishing grad school or undergrad or whatever it may be. And the world of medicine in the lab is so fast paced, and there's always something to be working on next. So I'm completely guilty of it, of thinking I'll be happy when blank is done, or when I've accomplished this, or when this project is wrapped up, then I can take a break or a breather. Then I can enjoy something and relax. But remember, as we're all kind of grinding towards our goals, it's huge to remember to kind of take a break, look around you and give yourself a pat on the back for what you've accomplished. And then you can keep working towards the next step, next milestone.
Well, as we look around, I'm going to go ahead and give Michelle her pat on the back because she is an incredibly gifted laboratory professional. She's an incredibly gifted professional, educator,
oh,
woman, friend, educator, all of those things. I've learned so much from my, I'll say short time. It's been just a few years. Pandemic years really don't count because
exactly.
But it's just
exactly.
been a few years of me knowing you, but I have been always just so impressed by your candor, by your intelligence, by your professionalism, by your confidence. And I've learned so much from you in the time that I've gotten a chance to know you. So we'll go ahead and give you your flowers now. And we hope to see so much more from you as you continue to grow and become way more visible in this field. And for all of those people who are listening who want to connect with Michelle and get to know her better, learn more about what she does in her field as a senior developer, learn more about what she's doing in some of the professional spaces like ASCP or ESCLS, can you tell the listeners how they can connect with you or how they can find you?
Sure, of course. So first of all, thank you for the flood of compliments. Mm-hmm. All of those can apply right back at you because you are amazing and inspiring and hilarious as a side note. But I would love to connect with anyone and everybody in the lab space. So I'm probably most active on LinkedIn. So again, my name is Michelle Campbell, and if it's hard to find me in the sea of Michelle Campbells, I'm sure Stephanie and the rest of the team will tag me in, along with this show on LinkedIn, and you can also look me up through my institution at Mayo Clinic on LinkedIn.
Thank you for joining me today, Michelle.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
And thank you all for listening to this episode today. We appreciate it. Like I said in the beginning, don't be stingy. Share this out. Connect with Michelle and continue to network with each other. And until next week, have a great week.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Elaborate Topics, where your hosts discussed relevant strategies for laboratory professionals. Please subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast platform and listen to us on directimpactbroadcasting.com. Stay tuned for another episode with information you can use to excel in your laboratory career.